All right, we're starting top of Kuf Samach Zayin Amud Aleph, the top, three lines down. Amar Abaye, Hai Mon, Deboy the Mechavei Chatimot Yadei Bebei Dino. So a person who wants to basically, you know, when you go into the bank today and they want to give you, they want signature samples so that they can match it up when you sign later on. They want to match it up against the signature. So now what happens if Beis Din calls up and says, listen, we want your signature. We want it for a signature sample. So you go ahead and you sign your name on a piece of paper and they present it to Beis Din. So he says over here, if you want a mechavei chatima de Beis Din, lo lechavi v'sof megilta. Do not sign your name at the end of a document. Don't put it at the bottom of a page. Dilma, mishkach la'acher. So then someone else will find it. Right? And then, ichtiv demesek bezuze. Meaning that when you sign at the bottom of a page, you're basically opening up the possibility that someone can write whatever they want beforehand. And you only have, there's only one aid here. We don't have to worry about one aid because it's about him. So if he writes on top, so-and-so owes me money, and that so-and-so is signed on the bottom, that's bichtav yadei, that's an admission that he does owe the money. So you don't want to be signed at the bottom of a document because then someone could impose a obligation on you that is not true. Vitznan, hotzio lav ktav yado, shu chayav lo. If you take out a person's handwriting that he's chayav lo, goveem nichasim b'nei chorin, then he can take, he gets, it's a full-fledged obligation. It won't let you to get to the mishubadot because it doesn't have a kol, but nevertheless, it will get you the right to collect. It'll be a document of, you know, a credit document, and from that, a debt document, and from that, you can go ahead and collect money. So that's what you don't want. We want to avoid something of that case. Now, when we say over here, "Ktav Yado," "Ktav Yado" doesn't necessarily mean his "Ktav," mean his actual handwriting, but "Ktav Yado" also means "Chatimat Yado," means that his signature. But the fact is that if we can verify that it's your signature and it says that you, I owe so and so money, and you've signed at the bottom, we're going to obligate you to pay that money. So, how bizvina? There was this tax collector that came before Abaye. Malay, nechse limar chatimot yedei. Please give me your signature. Tichi atu rabbanon. So when the rabbanon come, chavuli, they'll show it to me. And I'll let them go without tax. So this is the tax exemption for the Talmid Chachamim. So they want to get, how do you get the Ishur, how do you get the tour? How do you get exempted from the tax? You got to get the signature from Abaye. Abaye is the one who gives the approval. So you need to get some sort of approval from Abaye. So the tax collector goes, listen, Abaye, can you sign for me here? I'll have that on file. And then when any one of the Rabbanon comes and wants to be patur from the tax, he'll show me the document or the signature from you, and then I'll compare it against what's on the file, and I know I'll let him go with the taxes. So he said, fine. Abaye, of course, was going to agree. So Achbele Bereish Megilta. So he pointed to him to sign, or he went ahead and he started to sign at the top of a document. And Habakkuk Nogid Bey. So the tax collector was sliding the document away from him, sliding it down. Why? Because he wanted him to sign at the bottom of the document. So Abaye here is starting to sign at the top, and he's pulling the document away so that he would sign at the bottom. Says Amalei, Kvar Kadmucha Rabbanon. Rabbanon are already wise to your ways, and there's no way I'm going to be signing at the bottom of this document. I'll be signing at the top of the document in order to prevent exactly what you had in mind, which is that if you have my name at the bottom of a document signed, then you can do whatever you want with that document, or you can obligate me in the debts that I'm not chayavin. So, Amar Abaye, mitlat ad eser lo lichtov b'sof shita. Person should not write at the end of a sentence the words tlat until eser, 3 until 10, dilma mizayifikotov, because the problem is that he might go ahead and then change them. What are we afraid of? We're afraid that in Aramaic, if you have tlat, tlat is 3, but you can change that if you add a yun and a nun sofit to tlatin. So if you change it to tlatin, it means 30. So we're afraid of if any time you have these words at the end, eser, you can make it into eserin. Right, but once you reach Achad Asar, then we're not worried anymore, because you can't change. Achad Asarin is not, right, it's not meaningful. It's a strange way to express 21. But until, from 3 until 10, you could change the, basically, multiply it by 10, or by the 10 you make it into 20. So since the person could easily add on just two letters and make it a much larger number, we say don't end the line, or do not make that the end of the sentence. V'idramele, what happens if it happens? What do you do? Nahadre le dubere, train flat zimne. Repeat the word two or three times. And you go ahead, if you repeat the word two or three times, then you will, first of all, extend it to the end, so it won't be, there will be no more space left. And number two is then he can't, if he forges the last one, it doesn't matter, because there's another two of them in between. So we could see, this is just fraud prevention. I'm not sure, just to throw it out there, I'm not sure why, even if you word the word achadasre, why it's not a problem if it's the end of a row or end of a sentence and it stops. It's because you just, elef, right, exactly. Just add in the word elef or mea. So there's, not sure exactly. Here it must be that they feel like because it's right up against the other word, just a small, yud and a nun.
No, it's not to add another word. It's
right.
Just add a few letters.
Right, it's just add a few letters.
It's too tempting.
Right, it's too easy or too tempting. Exactly. I think that's what you have to say because otherwise you have the same problem with any number. You could add in, right, a multiplier of some sort afterwards. So then it won't be possible if he adds in these words that it won't end up at the in the middle of a shita. Then if he repeats, if he keeps repeating words or numbers, something like that, he'll make sure that it doesn't end up that it's the end, and therefore he could add in these extra words, extra letters to make it into something. So there was a contract, a document that said that a third of the orchard, or we've seen before that pardesa could mean a vineyard, was granted to this individual. So when you say a tilted pardesa, the shtar was written like this. There's a sale contract that was written. It says that you have beginta de'itli, in the garden that you have me, tilta b'pardesa. You have one third of this item. So what, of course, what does the lokeach do? He solved the problem. I'm sorry, no, I skipped that. Azal machake the gagay debet. He went ahead and bekare. He went ahead and erased on the bet of bit pardesa. He erased the top and the bottom basically and turned it into above. Bishavia ufardesa. Instead of bit pardesa, he changed it to vit pardesa or upadesa. So now, what is he? Now, when you read the document, what does it say? It says begin to eat lay, right? It says tilta. Now, in my garden, you have a third uper pardesa, and you have the whole pardes. But so, by changing the vav, right, then
a third of what?
A third of my ginta of my garden, and then meaning that he's saying that the tilta now no longer references the pardesa. It's not modifying pardesa; it's modifying beforehand in the contract. And pardesa means you get the whole pardes because that makes it into a vav. After the kamei de abaye, so it came before abaye. So Tzvi, as you noted, right away, Abai catches on. Why? I'm like, my time of Rav Achlei Alma, Lahai Vav. Why does that Vav have so much space next to it? I mean, by erasing the front ends of the Evet, so the Vav was there now, but there was a gap between the Vav and the word Pardesa. No, between the word Pardesa. So Kafte. So he tied him up, Vodi. And he admitted to his forgery. So now, the meaning of kafteh here is the subject of machloket rishonim. Does kafteh mean that he literally tied him up and whipped him right until he gave in? Or does kafteh simply mean that he was ma'ayim alav, that he tied him to the whipping post so that he got scared and then he admitted before he got whipped? But the question of whether he actually whipped him or not, but kafteh incarcerated him, or he caused him to be fearful of what could happen, and therefore Vodi, he gave in, he admitted to it. Manat Ruvain Vishimon Achai. They had somebody purchased a tract of property from brothers, and it says this belongs to Ruvain Vishimon Achai, that are brothers. Havalu Acha Dishme Achi. They also happen to have another brother named Achi. Azal Katabe Vav. So the purchaser of the property went ahead and added in a Vav. Because now what does it say? Instead of, say, for instance, three brothers owned equally the tract of land, so he had bought two-thirds of the land, because he bought it from two of the three brothers. So he said, why not? For a little Vav, I could get the third piece of the tract here, because his name is Achi. So he'll say, Ruvain, Vishimon, Veachi. So what does he all have to do? He has to add in just a Vav. So that's what he does. So now he had the whole tract of land. After the kamei de abaye, amalei. So what do you expect from abaye? My timeo dochet leyamo the high vav. Says, why is that vav so tight in there? Meaning that the other letters all have nice spacing, and all of a sudden this vav is stuck in there with no space. Says kuli high. Says kafte. So again, he tied him up, whether he whipped him or not, to vildi, and he admitted to his forgery. So Rava and Rav Achar Ba'ado were signed as the witnesses on this document. He says, listen, they brought it before Rava to verify the document, to show, you know, check the veracity. And Rava says, I have to admit that this is my signature. This is definitely my signature. But, never in my life did I ever sign a document along with Rav Acha bar Ada. So I know it's false because I've never signed with him, although it's a really good forgery because it is my signature. So he says, Kafte.
It couldn't be that he signed first and afterwards Rav Acha signed? Or it's always he had to sign?
Well, it depends, right? It depends on what they were signed on. It would be Echad Bifnei Asheni. And it's not clear that he was signed first without... it doesn't say that he was signed first on the document. You have to assume that he was signed second. Whatever the reason was, he knew that it couldn't have been that it was done without his knowledge, that there was a signature here. Kafte.
Is there a certain... signatures have to be a certain, like, one after the other, or when near each other, or
there's no halacha. We discussed before in Tosfos that he recommends signing one below the other, so you don't run into the... we don't run into problems with... number two is also you should not leave a space between them. A couple of things you can't do is you can't sign too far apart. There's a space in between that they can write. If you remember in the previous daf about that the contract was written on an erased part and our signatures were on the non-erased part. So you can't leave enough space so someone can forge that and put that in between and then erase the upper part, put in whatever they want. So you can't, they can't be too far apart. Number two is you shouldn't, this is a recommendation, it shouldn't be at the end of a line so someone can enter a one-line contract, slice the top off and end a one-line contract. And Tosfos also suggested before that they should stack the witnesses one on top of the other, so that he can't, and there, in the Shita Achrona, you can't create some sort of document. You can't change things and have put them one on top of the other. Then you do not have a complete edut if someone writes on the right margin next to them. So there are recommendations of have a sign and try to prevent fraud. But it's not... the Tosfos discusses the question, if someone doesn't do it that way, does then invalidate the document? And Tosfos says it does not invalidate the document if the edim are put at risk. But if the document is at risk, then it can invalidate the document. So the edim put themselves at risk, the document's fine, and that's their problem. But if it's the document itself is now at risk because of the way the edim signed, then it could be posel the whole document, it could ruin the whole document. All right, so now the case, he says, Kafte, Rava goes ahead and ties the guy up, and Vodi, and he admitted to the fact that this was a forgery. Now, Rava wants to extract some information from this, plagiarizer, forger, whatever he was. So Rava wanted to go ahead and extract the information from this criminal. Okay, I can understand that my handwriting, my signature, you were able to forge. He says, I don't understand how you forged Rav Acha bar Ada's signature. Rav Ada had a shaky hand. And so therefore his signature, not only was it unique to his signature, but also his hand shook. So when he did the signature, so simulate that type of shaking motion in a signature is very difficult. How did you forge it? He says, Amar, Ancha Yadaya Mitzra. He says, I placed my hand basically on the top of a fence, in a wire across on the fence, and then I bounced the wire. And so as I wrote, my arm on top of the fence on the wire shook as long as I wrote it. There's one. V'amila kam azarnuka v'katav. The rope that they used to have very narrow, right? It's a narrow bridge, and the people walking used to have to hold on to a wire when they crossed the bridge. So what he did was when people would grab the wire, it would shake the wire. So he basically put his arm on top of that wire that was going across, and then when he was signing, people were shaking the bridge, and the wire was shaking, he would sign like it was like the same simulating the shaking of the hand. He got onto this azarnuka, which is either some sort of water, when they used to pull the water out of the well. So it's either the rope or the suspension that holds the bucket to take it up that shakes when you're on top. And then he climbed up on it. It's himself. So that he was imbalanced. And therefore he was signing while he was trying to keep his balance. So therefore it simulated being in a shaking motion. So Rava got figured out how this individual was able to, the ingenious of this individual criminal who was able to simulate Rav Acha bar Ada's signature even though it was very difficult to forge. Next Mishnah. Kotvim get le'ish afo pi shein ishto imo. Person, you're allowed to document or write a get for a man even though his wife is not with him because the wife can be divorced against her will. The wife does not need to approve of the get, and therefore you can have the husband have the get written without his wife being there. V'hashovar l'isha afal pi she'ein bala ima. The shovar is the receipt that she's going to grant to her husband after he pays the ketubah, after the divorce he pays the ketubah, she's going to grant the receipt. You can give that receipt to the woman, right, even though the man's not there. Why? Because the shovar is l'schuto of the husband. If he ends up with that, his receipt, and there's a pay the ketubah, it's all to his advantage. So therefore, we're allowing the woman to do something that's the chovata, even though the husband is not there. Ubavad shehei makiran. That the Gemara is going to say, what does that mean, that he has to know them? Why does he have to know them, or who does he have to know over here? These, right? Vabal notain schar. Over here, the husband pays for the cost of the documentation here in a divorce. He pays for the get, and he pays for the shovar. Kotvin shtar lelove, afal pi shein malve imo. You can write a shtar for a debtor, even though the creditor is not there. Again, because it's the chovato. For the malve, there's no disadvantage for the document being written, and therefore you'll go ahead and you can write it. Vein kotvin lemalve, achilev lelove imo. Of course, the opposite is not true. You will not write a document for a creditor until the debtor is there, because that's the detriment of the debtor. But the lender is the creditor, and the debtor is the borrower. So the borrower, we will write him a document, even though the lender is not there, the creditor is not there, because it's to his detriment. So of course we'll write him a document. We don't mind. It's the schut to the creditor, to the lender. On the other hand, we will not write it for the lender without the borrower being there, because if the document's then written, and the borrower says, I never saw such a thing, I never borrowed money, then it's the chovato, so we won't let him do that. The debtor, the borrower, is obligated to compensate the sofer. You can document the for the seller the transaction, even though the buyer is not there. But you can't write it for the buyer without the seller being there. Again, because the seller, it's the chovato, we don't mind writing it for him, for the lokeach, which is the zchuto, it's for his benefit and to the detriment of the seller. We're not going to let him document it. The buyer pays for the document fees. We do not write documents of erusin and nisuin except if both parties are there. Shtarei erusin over here are the tanaim that we do today. That comes with that. I'm going to get with so and so, give so and so much money with his son, and this person gives so much with his daughter. So the financial agreements that surround the marriage, that's the shtar erusin. So there you need both parties to agree before you can document it. And then the shtar nisuin is the ktubah. It has to be there, and both parties have to be there in order to document it. V'achatan noten schar. The groom pays for the document fees. Ein kotvim shtar arisut v'kablanut ela midat shehem. You do not write a document of a sharecropper, either a sharecropper for percentage or a sharecropper for a fixed amount per year. You do not write that or document that except if both parties are there, both the sharecropper himself as well as the owner of the property. V'amakabel notein schar. And the sharecropper himself is the one who pays for the document fees. Ein kotvim shtarei birurim v'chum ma'ase bidin el midat shnehem. Anything that has to do with a documentation within Beis Din that adjudicates or declares some sort of action that affects two parties, you do not write that except if both parties are aware of the fact that you're going to do it. For instance, if you're going after the debtor, the borrower of the money, and you're going to sell his property out from under him because he hasn't paid his debts, then he has to be informed that that's what they're doing. Because if he's not informed, then he'll go sell property, he'll raise the money. But if he's not informed, then you can't go ahead and do it without him being informed. Ushneim notnim schar. And there, they jointly pay for the document fees. Rishim Gomer omer l'shneim kotvim shnaim l'zeh l'atzmo v'l'zeh l'atzmo. For both of them, we create two documents. One for him and one for the other. Meaning that when you have a document or documentation here, we don't simply have one document, because then whoever's holding the document's empowered. So we write two copies of the document, so each party has a copy of what the document is. And therefore there will be no questions about who's holding the document or who has the power here. Now some of the questions that just raised quickly, we've done these Gemaras together before, for instance the Gemara in Gittin, but is how can you write a get for a husband and then allow him to, without the wife being there, and then allow him to use it later on? What's the problem? The problem is that the get will be dated on the day that it's written, And then it will only be effective on the day that he grants the get to his wife. So then you have a star kadum, basically, because the get grants her the right to go claim her ketubah, and she can be goveh mishubadim to get her ketubah. She can take away from the kuchot, ubat, the peirot, whatever, from her nixle malug, in that there are all sorts of implications to the get being predated. So why is it that we don't worry about that? We allow the husband to go in, have it written, and no problem. So this goes back to a gemara that we saw on Daf Yudched Yutet in Gitin, which says that a person is lo akteme puranoto l'atzmo. A person does not accelerate puranut, things that are negative, to work for himself. A person does not accelerate these items. We have that every time that Tisha B'Av is a nidche. Right? As the gemara wants to know, how come by Tanit Esther we're magdimin, and by Tisha B'Av we are nidche, we push it off, we don't bring it up. And the Gemara says, puranut adu akdeminon. We don't bring up, we don't move up, we don't accelerate puranuta. So the same is true here. If a person writes a get, that means that his intention is to do it right away. People don't sit on a get. They don't have it sitting in their pocket, they don't keep it around, because people are not willing to sit with negative items or something that is, not necessarily the most pleasant experience. So therefore, when they write the get, their intention, and they intend to give it right away, and that's it. It's done. So that's one question. The second question we dealt with is with the Shovar Aisha, which is also a problem. The receipt that the woman gives also empowers the husband. Because if for whatever reason she sells the ketubah in between, and then the Shovar is predated to the time that she sold the ketubah, but she's only divorced later, then the Shovar also presents a problem for the kuchot, for the buyers. So that's also a problem. How can you write a receipt for the woman before the actual monies or the ketubah has been paid? So over there, you have to say that it's either, according to Shmuel, who we saw in Kiddushin, and we also saw it here in this Gemara and Bava Batra, that a person who sells a shtar chov and then is muchel, then it's machul. So over here, the woman who sells her ketubah, since she can always be muchel to her husband, a mechila on the ketubah, therefore that right of mechila already makes it that the lukuchot are in a precarious position, that they can't really rely on the fact that they're actually going to get to collect here, because she can undermine the whole sale anyway. So we're not going to worry about a predated shovar when she can just simply go, you know, my husband's forgiven on this item. So therefore, the idea has to be, according to Shmuel, that, or according to Abaye, who says that idav b'chatumav zachinlo, right? That when you sign the document, it becomes effective. And so that's the other possibility. And a regular shtar loved, we said over here also, if it's predated, it's a problem. So again, Tosfos over here says, v'bayamav edav b'chitumav zachinlo, which is a concept we've seen earlier, that the shibud already starts, or the shibud is released from the time that the edim sign on it. That they, because zachin shadam shelo b'fanav, and since this is chiyah for the individual, as soon as they sign on it, they're mezakeh to the individual, and the shibud is cut at that point in time. So that's the way you have to explain all these cases where we don't want a predated shtar to show up. We have to come up with a way to say that the predating is not to the detriment of other parties here. Okay, now the Gemara asks, Umay Tovajhe Makiran. So this is a question. What does it mean that he has to know, the sofer has to know the parties that he's writing for when it comes to the get and when it comes to the shofar? Why does he have to know the parties? So I'm Rabbi Yudamarab, Uvajhe Makir Shema Ish Beget, Vishema Isha Bishovar. He has to know the name of the man in the get and the name of the woman in the shofar. Because when he's writing for the man, he has to know who the man is that he's writing, because it's read lishma. And he has to know the woman when he's writing the shofar to ensure that it's given.
When he writes the get, he doesn't need to
know
the woman's name.
Ah, so Yati Rav Safra, Rav Achar, Bar Huna, Ve Rav Huna, Bar Chinina, Vyati Vabayi Gabayu, Vyati Vikaman Vibayu, Shema Ish, beget in, Shema Isha lo, just like David just asked, what about the woman's name? Shema Isha b'shovar in, Shema Ish lo. You don't need to know the man's name for this receipt. Belichush, what's the problem? Dilma katav gita, write a get, ve'azil umamatile itadeh deheach, and then he'll go use it for someone else's wife. Right? Or, bezimlin azla katval isha shovar, ve'avala gavra dalav dila, and she'll go give it to a man who's not her husband in order to be puter him from the payment of the ketubah. So again, with the shovar, it's easier to understand what's going to happen. The shovar, you write a shovar for this woman, and then they'll find another woman with the same name. She'll give it to the husband of this woman and say, here, take this, I don't need it, or I got it for you. They'll go ahead and hand it to this man, and this man now will be patur from paying the ketubah to this woman because he has a receipt that has her name in it. So then we don't allow that. We don't want to have the name just be the name of the woman. We want the name of the man in there also, so you can't come up with these scenarios. That's a much more far-fetched scenario where the name of the man and the woman are exactly alike. And that's more far-fetched, and we'll deal with that in a second. But now with the get. So now what's going to happen with the
get? Is the Torah says, ketav la lishma.
Right. It has to be written in lishma. So what are you going to do about a get? So that's what you can say. The gimel gatav gita, vazom matale de itadeach. That he's going to use it for another, again, here, the get, he's going to have to find.
He has another wife, he used it for some.
No, because he has to have the wife's name in there. But what we have is, he has to recognize. We're saying the chauffeur must know who the woman is, or the wife, his wife's name, that he's writing in there. If he does not recognize the woman, or doesn't know her, and the name, then he can't do it. Why? Because we're afraid he's going to get this documentation. And the Rashbam claims, the reason that we worry about it is that, it's mitkavein latira linaseish lokedin. He's basically going to use the document, another man who has the same name as him, and a woman who has the same name as his wife, he'll give the woman the get, and then the woman will be able to marry with that get. He'll basically free her from her husband, even though there's no get been given because it's documented with this name. Turns out that this husband does not have a wife named like this. So what he'll do is he'll say, look, I'll write it for me, and then my wife's name is da-da-da. And the chauffeur doesn't know who his wife is. So he writes the name. The name is not his wife's name. It's some other guy who has the same name as him. And his wife is going to be, he's going to put that guy's wife in, and then he'll hand it to the wife, and she'll be patur. Tosos takes issue with it. He says that you have to give the get with Nei Edim. If you have to give the get before Edim, the Edim will read the get, and they'll know what's written in the get. So what's the issue? So he says the Tosus explains, right, that exactly what we just read. Then she'll give it to another woman in order to take out from her her husband the ketubah. So she will not to divorce a woman. It won't be used as a divorce document, but rather it'll be used as a document to extract the ketubah. Because this woman was already divorced. We know she's divorced. They didn't have it. And then he'll pull out the get. He already paid her the ketubah. Then she'll pull out her get again and say, listen, you never paid the ketubah. Here, I have my get here. I want my ketubah. So Dosu sees it as a monetary issue, that he's going to create a document that empowers the woman to go and get a get. The Rashbam, which I think is what the Rashbam is saying, no, that he's going to empower the woman to be divorced. What about the fact that there are no edim to the divorce? But here you have a document that's signed with his name, this woman's name, and that's exactly what the Rishbam says. The Rishbam says you have a good get document over here, and the woman can walk around with this get, right, with this document and show that she's divorced, that she's properly divorced, without having any Edei Mesira. You're not going to have to find these Edei Mesira. Now, the possibility is that there are no Edim signed on it, that the sofer is allowed to write it, but the Edim can't sign on it. That would present a separate problem. That's maybe what Tosus is after here, that the Edim would only sign if they saw it. So then Tosus looks at it as a monetary document for extraction rather than a divorce document. I think you could read into the Rishbam exactly what Tosus is saying. For monetary extraction, you could just read it. He's going to hand it to this woman, and the woman, not that she's actually divorced, she'll pretend to be divorced. And that's the Tosus is like asking, oh, how could she be divorced with this document? Who says she has to be divorced? She's presenting the fact that she was divorced, not that she really is divorced. She's going to use it as a way to pretend or to falsify the fact that she was divorced. So now, the Gemara says, okay, so if that's the case, we have to say, Amar lo Abaye, Hachem Arav, Shema Ish Beget, Vuhu Adin, L'Shema Isha, Shema Isha B'Shovar, Vuhu Adin, L'Shema Ish. So that's it. In the Mishnah, when it said each party, didn't mean to the exclusion of the other party, but it meant that they have to both be there. You know, they wrote Shema Ish because the man is the one who's writing the get, and you can write it without the woman being there. And the Isha, they wrote by the case of the Shovar, because she can write it without the husband being there. So it was just consistent within the context of the case in the Mishnah, but not to say that you didn't need the other name, or you didn't have to know who the other party was. So he's got to know the husband, and he's got to know who the woman is. So now you come to the case. Vilichush, Vishnei Yosef ben Shimon, Adarim b'Yerachat, worry about two people with the same name. Dilmaktiv Gita Vazul Mamatile the Itate Deheach. What's the problem? You'll write it for this individual, and then you'll go and use it for the other individuals, right? The other individual will go use it, and it'll be a get shalom lishma. The question of the Gemara here is, even on Rav's position, that you write both, he has to know the wife and the husband, how does that prevent a problem? Because you could have basically a husband and wife who are identical names. Right, so once you have that, even Rav's solution that he knows the wife and the husband still doesn't solve the problem that another person could use this get and it'd be shalom lishma. So Rav has another principle which will prevent this type of problem. that if they live in the city and they're mukzake, we know that they live here. They both have to be present when the divorce takes place, and that's the same of any contract. Meaning that any type of transaction that they do, someone has a debt document or a credit document against them. They have to do it in front of both parties. They both have to be there, because otherwise every Yosef and Shimon is going to say, no, you borrowed from the other guy. You lent the money that you lent was to the other guy. I paid back the other Yosef and Shimon. Whatever it is, you can always make a claim and you can defer obligations away from this individual because he has another one. So you have to do it. They both have to be present in order to prevent this type of fraud. The other way to prevent the fraud is to write a third generation, which is the other way, right? To write Ben and then Yosef Ben Shimon, Ben something, assuming that they're different, right? I mean, that is, assuming that they're different, then you could create a differentiation between them that would clearly, right, some sort of identification that will clearly mark, you know, a picture, whatever it is that defines, that makes it clear who you're talking about. For someone else, says, Licha Shtilma Azalamata Achuita. So now, it looks like we know what he's going to do. He's going to another city. He'll go to another city and pretend that he's Yosef ben Shimon. He'll go to the new place. He'll change his name. He'll say, listen, I'm Yosef ben Shimon. Right? And now he has this wonderful get. And then he'll use it for the other woman. Meaning that if he changes his name, the person can go to another name and simulate what's written in the get by entering the city and then using it for the new name that he has. So who says the document, even if you suggest that the document's written with the knowledge that this is the man's name and this is the woman's name, and we prevented the problem of there being somewhat the exact same names because they have to be done in front of each other, nevertheless, they could just go to another city. A person who wants to, who wants to divorce his wife, he needs a get. So go to another city and start to pretend that his name is Yosef ben Shimon. He'll all of a sudden pretend that he has a new name. And he'll take then this get and he'll say, listen, I got this new name, or this woman. He'll give it to the wife of this individual, and all of a sudden they have a get, right, that is in place. So Malu Ravuna Barchinina Ochiamarav, Kosha Chuksak Shemo Beir Shlashim Yom in Choshimlo. That a person has to use his name for 30 days within the city. Once a person with the city has been there for 30 days and uses a particular name, then we assume that that name is actually his name. And we're not Choshish anymore that he's using some sort of alias to be here, some sort of cover name to be here. So Lo Yitchazek Mai. What happens if he hasn't been there 30 days? What do we do about his name? Rabbi Dekari Lo Ivani. We test him out. You call him his name. Call him Yosef ben Shimon. See if he turns around. Because if it's really his name, he'll turn around. If it's not his name, he won't turn around. So this is Rav Zvi Amar Ramah Bramute Zahir. He says, Abai, your solution is not a good solution, because anybody who's going to use a name or an alias that is covering up for something, or he's going to use a falsified name, he's going to practice that he turns around when that name is called. Oh, Tavra. There was a shovar, some receipt that Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba was signed on. So this woman who this shovar, this receipt, supposedly now claimed that that husband already paid her ketubah, whatever the receipt was that then prevented her from collecting what she was rightfully entitled to. She says, I never saw this. I was never there. I was never granted this receipt. How could this receipt been written without me being there? Because the receipt needs the woman to be there, because it's the chovata. So Amar Ananami Amri Luhu. Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba says to this woman, I also said to my chaverim that were with me, Lav ihihi. That's not the woman that I signed on. I signed on a shubar for a woman, and that's not the woman. Vamruli, and my chaverim said back to me, Make it the kashila, uvaga la kala. She got older, and her voice deepened. So when Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba first heard the woman speaking, he says, I don't remember ever signing on a receipt for such and such a woman. That's not the voice, that's not the woman that I signed for. So when the woman came in and says, you never signed on a receipt for me, or I never was present when there was a receipt, Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba confirms that he never signed for such a woman, such a document. But then his friends tell him, listen, wait a minute, you made a mistake. You think this woman, when she came to you, she was younger, and her voice sounded different. And that's why you didn't recognize her so quickly. So Amar Abaye, so now what do we have here? We have Idut from Yirmiyah Abba says that it wasn't his signature, he never signed on such a document for a woman. This was such a woman. Now he reverses his position based on what his friends are telling him. So now what's the problem? The problem is that this woman comes before him with a claim that listen, this shovar, this receipt that you're showing over here, maybe you, I know you signed on the receipt, we know this is your signature, but it wasn't me. I never received my ketubah, so I can't have a receipt. And number two is, maybe there's another man and woman with the same name, and that's where you signed on it. And Yirmiyahu Rabba confirms that by saying, I don't recognize this woman. I signed the receipt, I know that, but it wasn't for this woman. So his chaverim say back to him, what do you mean? Of course it was this woman, just she's gotten older and her voice changed, so you don't recognize her now. But this is the same woman. So now what do you have a problem? You have a problem by edut. Edut, a person, once a person gives testimony, they cannot go back and reverse their testimony. I mean that you're under oath, but once you give testimony, you can't reverse it. Now Rabbi Yehuda said it's not her. And now he's going to change his mind and say it is her. So that's what my Rabbi Magid. Once a person gives testimony, he cannot reverse that testimony. In this instance, we do not say that because the Talmud Chacham is not so particular about looking at women. He does not gaze at women. He does not look so carefully at women. So therefore, over here, when Rabbi Abba makes a mistake, it's an understandable mistake that he could have made. And therefore, when he's reminded or told, you know, oh, this was the mistake he made, then he can rectify his testimony. So because he rectified it, I would have suggested that the rectification over here is simply that he's not changing his mind. He's just, right, he said, the woman in her current state, I don't recognize. So we say to him, we modify his statement. We don't actually change what he said. Say that this woman is the same as the woman that you once recognized. So that modification we allow because, again, he wasn't so, we don't expect the Talmud Chacham to be so careful about the features of a woman. And therefore, when they reminded him or they pointed it out to him, then he remembered. So, Utab, there was a Shubar, the Havachatim Alei Rav Yirmiyahu Abba, Amralei, Lav Ana Havai. The woman came before him and says, that's not my Shubar, I never received my Ketubah. And, maybe there's another woman and a man with these names. Amrala, Ivra Ant Havat. Rav Yirmiyahu says, no, you are the woman. I recognize you and you are the woman. So, Rabbi says, Afagab the Tumor, the Rabbanan Lav Urche, the Medak. Even so, now what are you going to say? Rav Yirmiyahu Abba is not so careful when he's looking. So now, how can we believe his testimony that this is the woman over here? Gave me the duck, the duck. But once he says this is it, and I recognize, then we know he's done it. Once he's seen her, once he's identified her, we don't say then question his identification. We just say, if there are some questions about the identification, then we say, listen, you have to give him a break because he's not so particular. On the other hand, once he's made it, he said for sure, this is the woman I really recognize, then we say, once he's some late, once he's given thought to the fact that this is the woman, and he recognizes the features or whatever it is, then we say, that's it. There's nothing to reverse over here. I'm a rabbi. Hi, Subhan the Rabbanan, the Azlik Dushay Itata. A young Talmud Chacham that's going to marry a woman, the daber im amaretz baday, he should bring along with him an amaretz. Why dilma machlefu la minel to protect him, because the amaretz will recognize the woman. He goes and negotiate a kedushin with a woman, and then later on they come to the wedding and you have a Rachel and Leah situation. They switch the woman on him. Now he can't recognize, he can't see, because when he was there, he didn't pay so careful attention to who the woman was and all the features of the woman. Right? It was they were making a shidduch, right? They made an agreement, it was mekadesh. Sure, a year later, the woman shows up. How did you know it's the right woman that he was engaged to before? He says, take an amaretz with you, because amaretz pay attention to these details. They really, you know, they focus on the woman, they know all of her features, everything about her, and therefore when he shows up later, this amaretz can identify and say, yeah, this is the woman that you negotiated before, and they can't do a rachaleah switch on him. Undermine. So therefore, again, the halacha, it's interesting here, three halachas from Abaye about Itzuvah v'Rabbanan, right, that reference, I mean, there are a whole bunch of halachas that Abaye above in this Gemara, but the last three are about Itzuvah v'Rabbanan. One is that, and because of that, they don't pay such careful attention to the features of women, they don't stare at women, therefore you have three nafkaminot. One is that when it comes to their testimony, if they reverse their testimony with the recognition of a woman, we don't say that's a reversal of their testimony, but simply, right, a misguided view of the woman because he wasn't so careful in the first place. Once they have identified the woman, we say that's it. And number three was that when you get to go get married or have kiddushin, they should take someone else along who's more particular and who can pay attention to those details of the woman so that no problems of a mix-up later on. Okay, we'll stop over here.